SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
And we'll dive right in. In fact, maybe I'll even save the Saratoga recapping for Nick, for Nick's presence. We can look at it from yesterday together. Some interesting results yesterday. It's another good day, challenging. But I will slip in the Del Mar before anything else, because that was. Exactly what, right? Isn't it? Who is it? They are who they thought we were. We are who we thought we were. It was what we thought it was. It was a very challenging sequence, and it paid the way challenging sequences are supposed to. $177,500. $177,000. $1.2 million. Crazy, like seven times. What was it? It was 144,000. Unbelievable. But that, you know what? The Sunday to Wednesday or Sunday to Thursday, it gives people a chance. You know, yeah. It was made, you know, particularly tough with a couple of winners that were far from impossible. But in terms of ticket building, That's where it got dicey. You had Palio's Princess. I was surprised that she paid 7-1, the mare. This was Steve Knapp for the Redhams, Redham bred, and was actually claimed by Sandino Hernandez, but paid $1,580. The favorite, A Day in Asia, I thought that was even strange, that A Day in Asia took as much money as she did to go favorite. Little over 5-2. Anyway, Palio's Princess, I mean, looked a winner like every step under Kyle Fry. So 1580, feeling pretty good. The second leg, that maiden mile, and I leaned on the two Bafferts and on Visceral. If you watch the board, Visceral opened up at 3-5, I think, or 4-5, and then slowly drifted up until finally he went off at 10 cents above Canada Gate, $2.30 versus $2.20. Indispensable, who, you know, had this was a good group of maidens, and Indispensable felt like had to improve. Had a bit mischievous. Had Indispensable not caught a bit mischievous, you might be looking at a double carryover, because a bit mischievous was 17-1 and very tough. But Indispensable pays $940. The single, I made the mention that Baby Kristen felt like a potential single for small budgets, and she was a winner every step. Splashed in Gold, this was a tough beat, to be honest. And Summer Chief really never got there until basically at the wire. It was a photograph, but it was clear that Splashed in Gold was your winner. Bob Hess and, you know, maiden claimer, making a second career start and on the drop. So a drop from Calbred maiden special to open company 20. And, I Summer Chief, I was excited about at a nice number, 13-1, but couldn't get there. And I had gotten, technically knocked out with Indispensable. But, was hoping to go 5-6 maybe. That would have been dashed anyway by the late double. Midnight Mammoth, what a win. I retweeted. If you haven't seen the TVG interview with Craig DeLazzi, and, of course, one of the great West Coast families, Elite Wally, and Craig has been doing it for a long time. And Midnight Mammoth did figure to get the lead, and Reincarnate tried to stay in contact, but Midnight Mammoth was just cruising, absolutely cruising under Iosso, and Armando started to widen, and there was nothing Juan Hernandez could do on Reincarnate. Midnight Mammoth wins off by a dozen. Amazing. And paid $20. For ticket purposes, you know, deep tickets could absolutely have Midnight Mammoth on, but smaller tickets, we were doomed, leaning on Reincarnate. And then in that nightcap, which I said with Brad was one of the most fun races of its kind you're going to see, you know, because you had that case of horses that have, you know, tried to break their maiden and failed a number of times versus a bunch of second-timers that looked like they could jump up. Well, it was, in fact, Leo Powell, and we've been singing his praises, but American Glory. And American Glory was one of the ones that, you know, has been nosing around second, third, fourth, you know, beaten by some solid horses. The import breaks through here and wins well. And you would have, you know, there were two horses that would have produced a double carryover, and I think Divisible By was one of them. Went off at a crazy 45-1. Didn't need to be that price, the Drysdale. And it had an okay workout recommendation from Andy Harrington. Divisible By, the exacta, 345.60. Yeah, so... Yeah, the horses that you might have leaned on, Nation and Oscar Joy, no good. Third and seventh, I tried to make a case. And in fact, Brad Free and I were texting, and Brad and I had the same idea. I saw later, I sent Brad a text about Summer Chief. And then I said, you know, in the nightcap, I'm going to Dutch the two. And I don't do that often, but I said, I'm going to Dutch the two D'Amatos. And that's what I did, a couple of wind punches, and then I did a couple of underneath exacta keys with, you know, with the major, you know, with the major other, but neither one of them could impact Rowley or Sweet Odyssey. They both were nowhere. But then I saw later that Brad had done the same. He said, I'm doing the same thing, and he was keying the two of them with Nation in exactas, but I hadn't seen that when I texted him. Anyway, congratulations to those that pulled this out. I you know, and I hope, you know, I hope it wasn't just big, you know, big ticket type players, although, you know, they're entitled to. But I hope, you know, it was a impactful score of best score of your playing career, etc. It was fun. It was really fun. Certainly on Monday, I'm going to reach for Craig DeLazzi and go pull up. I retweeted it. Go pull up that interview afterward with Craig, who got emotional. And, of course, longtime clients that, in fact, Todd Shrupp came on and explained, you know, the connection. So fun day yesterday. It was. And you know, Saratoga, as I said, we'll do with Nick right now. And I'll tell you the quick lineup rundown. We've got Nick here immediately, and we'll check in with Callie. It's the Francis Dash Day on Sunday at Laurel. Scully, 10-ish, 10 o'clock. David Aragona as well. We'll get David's opinions. We're going to check in with, you know, there's a hard news story from came out on Wednesday, and I figured I would save it to address today. The situation with this Churchill turf course that just has been problematic. It's a blend that, you know, is quirky. And Churchill announcing on Wednesday that they are not, you know, they're treating it right now. They're scraping the course, and they don't anticipate it'll be usable in September. It's unfortunate, and it's frustrating, certainly for the horsemen. I mean, not that they're not going to have plenty of turf opportunities at Kentucky Downs, but, yeah. So Gary Palmisano Jr. Is going to join us. I asked Gary to come in and address the situation. So we'll hear from Gary in Hour 3. Dave Grenig will check in with Hammer, who's at the convention, at the had the session on Wednesday, the racing secretaries and the condition book conversation. And, of course, for those of you that just listened to the replay, you heard Jim Gagliano refer to this project that is going to get a test drive in terms of the ratings program. So we'll let Hammer, he's been promising to expand on it. So we'll hear from Hammer later as well in Hour 3. And I said Dave Grenig? Yeah, we'll check in with DG as well. All right, let's get Nick in here. I'm a couple minutes late as we try to play catch-up. And fun day today. Good card. I'm a little behind, but the Amsterdam today for the three-year-olds, making some auditions toward the Alan Jerkins. And then, of course, Saturday, the Vandy and the Dandy, the fabulous pairing that we love. And I actually made the Vanderbilt, Saturday Beat Pick contest game. Race. All right. I ended up with Subrogate, who I think is going to be a fair price. And I think Andy said he liked Subrogate, when we talked Tuesday, but, it's a terrific, even though it, you know, it's six horse field, it is really good. I mean, Skelly, what do you do? You know, Baby Yoda is Baby Yoda. Is it just Saratoga and nowhere else? Maybe. So I made Baby Yoda the alternate, but I went with Subrogate. And then on Sunday, the Beat Pick race is the Eddie Reed, which is one of my favorite races. The Eddie Reed is been great for a long, long time. The elders, three and ups. Going the mile and the eighth. And it is terrific. Absolutely terrific. I reached back for Gold Phoenix, the veteran gelding for Little Red Feather, who started the meet, of course, out there with the Oceanside win. Right? Was it the Oceanside? I think it was the Oceanside win. I know they were one of those stakes opening. I think it was the Oceanside, right? Where's my list? Here. Delmar. Right? That was them. Formidable Man, I think. The Gold Phoenix is my pick in here. And I think I made Johannes the backup, the alternate. But Rick Dutrow sends Masterpiece out for Ivarone and company. Balnikoff is in here for D'Amato. Last seen winning the dinner party, of course. Du Jour. I mean, arguably Baffert's best turf horse ever. Now six. And never worse than second in three tries at Del Mar. Coming off the third behind Johannes in the Shoemaker. Balladeer for Papa Padromo. Really good. Johannes has mentioned Easter. What's wrong with Easter? It is a terrific race. And I'll also mention, by the way, on Sunday, if you didn't get a chance to look at the draw yesterday, the fourth race, which is your run of the mill mid card allowance, going a mile on the dirt, and you start to thumb through the PPs, and oh, Baffert's got a Calbred, and Dan Blacker Red Line, and Ultimate Gamble for Glad, and oh my gosh, here's Parenting. Yeah, Parenting shows up in this allowance. So you can assume that this is either, I mean, either way, it's a tightener and a prep for whatever's next, whether it's the Travers. This is a mile, fourth race on Sunday. So keep that in mind near the end of Saratoga and the beginning of Delmont. Let's see what time that goes off. Hold on. The Eddie Reed doesn't go off till 9 p.m. Sunday. The fourth goes at 6:30. And the last at Saratoga goes at the race will run between the 11th and 12th. We got a 12 race card Saturday here tomorrow. So between after the 11th, which is a state bred turf allowance, and before the state bred maiden special, that fourth race at Del Mar parenting. So between the Jim Dandy a little earlier in the day and parenting, there's your further potential additions to the Travers field that we're monitoring and that we're, let's be honest, I think everybody is going to start to get excited about. I'm going to try Nick again and hope that, and I think he is ready. There we go. Nick, good morning. We had a little delayed start. We couldn't get in the gate on time at 9, so fell behind a little. Nick, I've been saving yesterday's recap for you, and rather than just mention the winners, and you and I were doing some texting, there were some out of whack. The board was a little out of whack yesterday. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no doubt about it. There was some surprising betting. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the things that's sort of a hallmark of New York racing right now is that the win pool does not have the same level of involvement from CAW players as the other pools do. So you're going to see some inconsistencies, some pretty wide inconsistencies at times between the win odds and some of the exotic payoffs. I think we really saw this play out with the Echo in Eternity Duck Fat Exacta. It also never fails to amuse that Twitter just completely lights up when this happens, and we hear a variety of different conspiracy theories, yet it's just quite simply that CAWs are not involved in the win pool at the same level. So I think the second race winner is really the one that you kind of gravitate towards in terms of being a shockingly high price. That was a race that was always going to be bet, I guess I don't want to say surprisingly, or it was going to be tough to predict beforehand how that race was going to be bet. And David made Condiment Girl a pretty solid morning line favorite, and she ran, you know, it played out as such. She got bet well, and the winner Another Day Gone By went off 6-1, which was twice the morning line odds that I thought were probably pretty accurate. And it was one of those situations where which really you're going to get at Saratoga more so than you are at really any other place in the country, where a horse can be dead, quote unquote, dead on the board and still run well because of the competitive nature of the racing itself. So it ended up to Condiment Girl went off 3-2, which was definitely lower than I expected. And Another Day Gone By drifted up to 6-1, which was higher than I expected. So those were undoubtedly prices, I think, that surprised.
Well, and the reason it's important, or the reason at least it's fodder for discussion, is because when you're formulating your handicapping opinion and your betting approach, and maybe this is unique because, you know, you and I have a public opinion that, you know, that we offer out there, and if you think that Another Day Gone By is going to go off at this kind of a number, I mean, I've gravitated to Run Devil, and Run Devil was a good 7-1, so it's not like she didn't go off at an advantageous price. But Another Day Gone By, I put as the second choice, as the next best, because I thought she was going to be in the 3-to-1 range. So when she's floating around, you know, 9-to-2, 5-to-1, and I was like, what is going on here? I was like, okay, fine. So keyed off of that one, and there was another. This is not the only one yesterday. There was, where was it? Oh, in the race that I used Beachwalker as the DePaula play of the day. Beachwalker, and of course there were the scratches, and so it changed the complexion of that race, including, you know, what was anticipated. It was still a pretty hot enough pace to let the Stalker closers into it. But if I think Reddington is going to go off at close to 8-to-1, and Beachwalker ends up at 13-to-2, so it's just funny. It struck me yesterday, Nick, that there were, you know, there were situations we don't see all that much. I mean, I was a little confounded.
No, it's what makes Saratoga great, no doubt about it. Reddington was a very good pick by Andy Serling too. Definitely a horse with some dirtied up form that made a lot of sense. I think the, you know, one of the bigger takeaways from that race, and I hate to harp on this, but you obviously want to identify trainers that are either hot or struggling, and nobody's struggling right now in the training ranks more than Rudy Rodriguez, who saddled Print Rack, and somehow he didn't even get the lead from Magnolia Midnight, who he had easily beaten to the lead the time before. A lot of times when a given trainer, or especially a particular horse, when you want to get a sense of exactly how they're doing, you really pay attention to how they're getting out of the gate. And if a trainer's consistently having horses struggle out of the gate, their barn generally is going to struggle pretty mightily as well, especially on the dirt. And we've seen this play out on multiple occasions with Rudy over the last, you know, 10 years or so, that he'll go through some of these really long struggles at Saratoga. And I mean, right now I think his number is up to 0-for-24, so it's been quite a slog for him. It's hard to anticipate that he'll get that turned around quickly. He will eventually win, I would think, and probably is going to do so at a bit bigger price than he would have otherwise, because the public is undoubtedly going to try and retreat. But yeah, it's been a particularly difficult meet for him. I'll tell you another guy in the jockey ranks, and I mean, I've tweeted about this, and again, I don't want to keep harping on it, but I do think it's important to make sure you're understanding who's doing well and who's not. But Luis Saez is just, this has been brutal. This is, he hasn't won a race since Tough Catch won on the opening Saturday of the meet. He's ridden every day save Haskell Day, so it's gotten to the point now where Luis is 2-for-54, and it's going to be very hard to dig out of that hole. The other reason why I bring it up is because so many times when we're looking at race shapes and trying to figure out what might happen on the racetrack, one of the more reliable things is that, you know, Luis is going to get to the lead, and he is not. He is not putting speed horses on the lead. He's not getting them out of the gate. He is just completely lost out there right now. This is probably the recipe necessary for him to have a 3-win day today, which is me ranting about how poorly he's going. But yeah, it's tough to have a lot of confidence in what's going on with him too. I know he'll shake out of it, a former Saratoga riding champion. It'll turn around at some point, but it has been, it's been a rough go. Last thing as far as yesterday goes, and people really, really, really need to be paying attention to this. The inside part of the inner turf course is absolute gold. That played out 3 different times yesterday. It is very clearly a massive advantage to be saving ground on the inner, which we've seen happen when the rails have been taken down in the past. The thing is, the rails usually don't get taken down until 4-Star Dave week, but they got taken down earlier this year because Glenn Kozak is adjusting the rail settings each week. And now we've seen it play out very, very clearly through 2 days. It was a little bit more of a up to interpretation type of a bias on Wednesday, but yesterday, very clearly, if you were inside on the inner turf, there were 2 inner turf races. One of them was won, of course, by Boss Lady Bailey, who virtually never left a hedge, and the Nightcap was nearly won by Kid Creasa at 31-to-1. Who didn't exactly set a slow pace either, but stayed on very well in a race that became a total merry-go-round. So one of the things that's fun about these situations is that not only do you have bet backs for horses that end up going wide, it's always fun to see which riders have not picked up on it, because it's almost as if they're ignoring it willfully. You'll see guys put horses 3 and 4 wide the whole way around there. It was actually why I wanted to bet against Idea Generation yesterday, because I thought there might be a bias coming out of Wednesday's racing, and she ended up having a wide trip and was not a factor for the win. I was just never using Boss Lady Bailey. That was the problem.
Couple of quick hits, too, and go back to the 10th for a second, the nightcap, because there is something instructive in here. And congratulations to Kerry Bryan on her first Saratoga flat win. The Mission Impassable Gelding, Mr. Tonic, there's something very notable here. And if you're looking at the chart, what don't you see? You don't see the $40,000 under the claiming price line. And, of course, everybody else was available for $40,000. This is usually a topic in reverse when we look at optional claimers and you find horses that have already basically past the condition and they're available for the tag, and they should get extra credit because they're being offered and they've already beaten the condition. This is the reverse, and this has a new rule that just came into effect weeks ago. HISA has added a second waiver claim opportunity for horses that you bring back. And it has been in a lot of jurisdictions, there's been the waiver claim if you've had a horse off, I think, 6 months or more. And, it was really nicely, it's a nice idea because you put the money in and you invest in giving the horse time off. But now you can waiver twice. And that's what Kerry employed here. And so Mr. Tonic was the only horse that was not available for claim and wins and pays $1,720.
Yeah, interesting note, no doubt about it. This is a horse that that Kerry took over the training for, and she's done a very, very good job on some of the other circuits, and obviously is dipping her toes a little bit more into New York. A former assistant of Jonathan Shepherd's, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
More than an assistant, so, absolutely. Was right arm and basically took over and has gone on with it nicely and is heavily invested now in the flat side of things as well. I mean, she is way more than, at this point, than just a chase outfit.
Yeah, exactly. I noticed that she brought up the other day that she was trying to transition her barn more towards flat racing with the difficulties of steeplechase and the weather and whatnot. So glad to see it because obviously she knows what she's doing. And it was a very heady ride by Frankie Dettori. I think one of the things that's really made Frankie do well here is when he's aggressive. So I would assume that we'll see quite a bit more of that, as time goes by, because it's really where he's at his most comfortable. So it was good there, and obviously won a photo over Kid Creesa, who ran quite well for Linda Dixon, Alicia Ruiz, nearly getting what I would imagine would have been his first Saratoga win. Hopefully there'll be one out there for him because that was certainly a good ride. Put a speed horse on the lead. That's all you have to do. Here's yet another scenario where we're talking about what I brought up already, which is that the two was supposed to be forwardly placed. And Sias did not get the horse to the lead. And obviously that was all she wrote because he ended up the fifth.
The action, any quick hits today?
I'll tell you a horse that I like quite a bit today. I did notice that I finished my selections. I'm waiting for scratches, and I noticed that Andy picked a horse too, which we have not talked about the card. Usually I get the 5-minute conversation where I get talked at shortly before first post, but I like the one Clear the Air.
Talked at or talked to?
Did I say at?
You said at.
I like the one Clear the Air in the eighth. This horse is for those of us that want to watch replays and consider ourselves trip handicappers, this is sort of our dream, right? This is a horse that's had two really difficult trips in a row, and they might get a little bit overlooked because of how bad the finishing positions are. But this horse had real trouble twice in the Saratoga Turf Sprint 2 back. And then last out at Churchill, actually arguably had a worse trip than he did at Saratoga because it was a prolonged amount of trouble. He just got into a couple of tight spots with Tyler two starts back last time. He never got comfortable. He got steadied multiple times around the turn, shuffled back, ended up having to angle out, and then he actually still had a little bit of run in the final furlong. This is a horse that I think is going to run significantly better. I'm hoping that Dylan is a little bit more aggressive with him early, provided he gets out of the gate. Don't necessarily love the rail, but I do think that with the speed that he has, it's enough for him to get in the mix. So I like Clear the Air quite a bit. I'll tell you, Steve, the ninth today, fingers crossed that we don't get a bunch of scratches out of here, because this is one of the best allowance races you'll see at Saratoga in an entire meet, right? It's just a number of stakes caliber horses, a number of stakes winners in there that are doing battle. including Zozos and General Jim, both of whom are graded stake winners, and a lot of horses that are just trying to get themselves restarted. You've got Scotland, who won the Curlin last year, who's coming in off a good race at Churchill, and Creative on the inside, who's been stakes caliber on multiple occasions, hasn't actually won one, but is multiple graded stake placed. He's looking to rebound off the True North. He was a little wide that day. I can't wait to bet Gunpilot back out of the True North for what it's worth. I was kind of hoping he'd be in the Vanderbilt, but his stablemate Skelly is in there because he was wide the entire way, and it's become abundantly clear to me that the rail on Belmont Day was a big advantage. I picked General Jim. He's getting Lasix for the first time. He's back off a layoff, a little bit of a layoff, apparently training well. This is a horse that I thought really was always designed to be a one-run dirt sprinter. His last two dirt sprints have not been all that great, but I think it's a good, it's an interesting placement by Shug with a horse that really has been shown he's been able to do a couple of different things. So we'll see. This might be the right time to get him price-wise. Of course, this might be my Luis Saez turnaround play. Let's hope that this is the one where he gets his meat going.
Well, one of the most interesting entrants in here, assuming that Jason Cook put him on the van and has arrived. Three Technique.
Oh, speaking of graded stake winners, absolutely.
Comes back to New York. And I don't know. Coach Parcells may slip out after the eighth. I don't know if he wants to watch Three Technique in front of him. should Jason author another rabbit out of the hat? It's been such a great story. The seven-year-old Mr. Speaker. And is now, you know, bordering on $1 million in earnings. In fact, let's see, 70, he would get, it was 70, if you get 72,000, he would still be just short. He'd be at 995.
He'd be just short of it, yeah. First start at Saratoga since he broke his, I'm not his first start since, but broke his maiden at Saratoga on the dirt all the way back in 2019. Winning by five lengths in his third career start. This is a horse that always showed a tremendous amount of ability, and Jason's done a great job with him. He owes me nothing. I was lucky enough to be on him when he won the Knicks Go back in 2022. Totally turned my Derby weekend around. But a horse who had a lot of ability early in his career, broke his maiden and beat Necker Island in there. That was his third start after being beaten as the favorite in his second start behind Basin, who of course came back and finished second in the hopeful in his next start and ended up being placed first. Or I'm sorry, won the hopeful in his next start, ended up being placed first a little bit later in the Arkansas Derby that he ended up losing the first placement from when Charlatan had those issues.
One other horse to note in here, all the way on the outside in the open air outside box, the Marty McGee, where the air is fresh and clear. How about Scotland? The Gemswick Park son by Good Magic. He's not going anywhere for Ellen J. Foxwoods. He's a gelding. He's the homebred. And he comes back here for Mott, who, is sending out live horses. And Scotland has a little bit of a look out there at 6-1.
Yeah, I got lost putting horses in my top four in here. I ran into so many. I wanted to use Castle Chaos.
Yep.
I feel like Sheriff Bianco is not quite good enough, though I will say he didn't get the most comfortable of trips last time out when he was fifth behind Subrogate. And Subrogate's going to end up going off one of the favorites in the Vanderbilt on Saturday. So that race was actually a lot better than it looks on paper. And this is exactly what Sheriff Bianco has always wanted to do. He wants to run somewhere between 6 and 7 on the dirt. Linda's gotten very aggressive with him a couple of different times and sent him long. And he's just run well because he's a good horse. But this is his game. So don't be shocked if Sheriff Bianco gets a big slice of this at what should be a nice price. I mean, really, really, fingers crossed this race stays together. I'm going to be very disappointed if we see the scratches and, you know, three or four of these horses come out, because this is a race that could just be a lot of fun if everybody goes.
Well, turned our attention to Saturday. We got the Dandy. We got the Vandy. We got the Cross Country Pick 5. The Monmouth Oaks managed to come up quite interesting with Scalable and Chilled and Regaled and Yes to Champagne. Little Jamie for Robbie Medina shows up from the Thoroughbred Center. Kathleen O'Connell with Lady Lala. My Two Sophias is a price. And then there is your Black Eyed Susan winner, Gunsong from Mark Henning, coming into town. So you've got the Monmouth Oaks, which figures into the Cross Country. And where do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to knock out the Monmouth races, then we can talk Saratoga.
Right.
Gunsong is really the horse to beat, I would say, in the in the Monmouth Oaks. I mean, she's just much more accomplished than the majority of these horses. But what you'll get in a race like this with some of the, you know, the quote unquote second tier types in this division, our horses with a little bit of upside. I don't really think Scalable has any upside anymore. Yeah, she won last time out, but she was a last gasp lunge with, you know, with a pretty nice setup in front of her. I wonder as well if she is as effective without Lasix, which obviously will come off with this being a stake race. That was a pretty notable effort by Chilled last time out. I mean, she absolutely walloped the field, got an 83 buyer. Genetics came back and won her next start, albeit in an off-the-turf race at Indy, so it wasn't as if that was, you know, one of the stronger races you'll ever find. I did think that you have to at least mention Little Jamie, who you brought up, who narrowly missed in the Indiana Oaks last time out. She's a horse that had always shown some ability and ran well in there to be a good second behind Chattelist. Actually beat Impel, who was the 1-5 favorite in there. One of the more disappointing horses I've ever seen is Impel. Looked like she was going to be any kind of horse coming out of her first two starts. And you want to talk about a horse who hasn't been effective without Lasix. I think that's really been her problem. So I thought Gunsong would be particularly tough in here. The other race in the cross-country sequence from Monmouth is the ninth, which is a turf sprint, and you know it's what you'd expect in here in a one other than turf sprint. It's a tough race. I did think that there were a number of ways you could go. I thought Vicky Oliver, who's back in there as well with Ardazzi, probably just been facing better horses. I think what you're going to get in the turf, even in the turf division in Kentucky, is going to be better than what you're going to get around here. But Hopes and Dreams comes out of the Blue Sparkler. It's a real class drop. She got off to a slow start and still put together a nice bid. I kind of felt like she's one that you'd really want to include. There's really not a lot of depth in here in terms of horses that have run well lately. So I think I'll kind of probably hone in on those two. And I couldn't make enough of a case really for anybody else. I did think that Happy and Smiling was interesting going to Lindsay Schultz and switching surfaces. The Dam was a three-time winner on the turf, so there's probably reason to believe this horse could get better on the turf. The second Dam ran a couple times on turf, did her best running on synthetics, but never actually won. So it's a run happy, right? And run happies on turf don't do much for me. I did get beaten by the one that won last Friday's nightcap at Saratoga, and I cursed, especially the next time I saw a Mattress Mac commercial come on TV. But you know, it happens a lot more down here than it needs to. That was kind of the Monmouth look overall.
Just be thankful you don't work for the power company.
I'll tell you what, he went after him. Yeah, he found himself a seat at the table sitting alongside the mayor. But yeah, anyway. Right. So the three races at Saratoga in the sequence, the first of which is a 5.5 furlong maiden special event. And I mean, Scarlet Poppy's going to go off, I would say, a pretty solid favorite here. There's going to be some more so than wise guy money, but actual legitimate money for Arisu, who's Chad has tried to get on the turf twice, now brings back off a giant layoff. It's interesting because Chad is not a guy that really wants to go wild with turf sprinters. You know, he's going to give his horses an opportunity going long as much as he can. And this is a horse whose pedigree really wouldn't lead you to believe is going to be better going shorter. And actually, the way she's run on the racetrack doesn't really lead you to believe that she'd be better going shorter. But he must be pretty adamant that she wants to sprint because he's running Arisu short, coming back off the long break. We'll see if she's effective. I did think that Aunt Nona could run a little bit better second time out. John Kimmel got a win early in the meet and is one of the better trainers around in New York, at least when it comes to turf sprinters. So felt like she might be the price that you'd want to include. The ninth is a tough allowance race, typical of what we get on a regular basis at Saratoga, specifically on the weekends. And I mean, you're going to have a number of horses in here that are contenders. And the issue is that the favorite is on the far outside. So how she works out a trip from out there is going to be a little tricky, but she's going to have to do so. That's risk tolerance. Who broke his maiden back in April, now comes back from a layoff. That race hasn't really held up in terms of productivity coming out of it. But he did the majority of the running that day and looks as if he's the horse to beat this time around. I mean, there were alternatives. I really feel like I want to probably try and flesh some of them out a little bit more to get a better idea of maybe if I'm missing something. I tend to do that with a lot of these Saratoga races and think that, you know, the joke's sort of on me until I find something maybe that didn't come to the eye first time around. I thought Main Beach could be a little bit dangerous towards the inside. Didn't really have a big issue with Navy Seal, who's got that really nice Coolmore pedigree and gets Lasix for the first time for Wesley Ward. So there are undoubtedly alternatives in here. Risk Tolerance is a deserving favorite, but I think working out a trip from out there is definitely not the easiest thing. So we'll have to see how that ends up shaking out. And then the Jim Dandy, you know, I saw the entries and looked at the race on Sunday when it was drawn, and I thought, you know, I imagine David's going to make Sierra Leone a pretty solid favorite. I do think in general the main track has played a little bit more fairly in the last few racing days than it did maybe early in the meet. I try to remind everybody when I hear them complaining about the way the track is playing that, you know, this Saratoga main track, since it was refurbished back in 2020, has been decidedly more speed favoring than it was prior to that. So this isn't anything new. This is what we've kind of been dealing with for a while. So, you know, the question, Steve, is how can you have any confidence in Fierceness? Right? I mean, how can you really look forward to betting a horse that has been so remarkably good when he's been when on his game and so remarkably bad when he's not? And how is his trip going to be appreciably different than what it was in the Derby? Maybe with the difference being the pace will not be as forced as it was that day. But, I mean, if you want to tell me you have a great amount of confidence that Fierceness is going to three-wide chase horses like Seize the Gray and Pony Express or even potentially Gould's Gold or Batten Down and end up putting all those horses away and then hold off Sierra Leone, I don't have an issue with it from the standpoint that he's run fast enough to do so. It just, as you say that, as you lay all of those things out, it seems hard to believe.
100%. And I'm every day since Monday when Baffert joined us and he talked more glowingly about Pony Express than a couple of his own horses. I mean, he gushed about how impressed he was with Pony Express and that he is not a mirage.
Yeah, and you know what? Baffert's Indispensable, I'm sorry, Baffert's Canada Gay came back and ran well yesterday, beaten three quarters of a length, upped his buyer by 3 points. Indispensable came back already for Sadler, was one of the only off-the-pace winners that you're going to see at this meet and improved his buyer figure by 6. He was in that same race with Canada Gate, and Winterfell came back as well and improved his figure by 7 points. So perhaps Pony Express is the horse that's sitting on a big forward move and now third off the layoff. He certainly dominated things on the front end that day. We'll see how aggressive Joel is with him out of the gate because, you know, if for some reason Seize the Gray doesn't break with that quick first step, you could easily find yourself with Pony Express on the lead. And this is a horse with a beautiful pedigree, so there's no reason why long-term he can't be awfully nice. And at the very least, he can be a thorn in the side of anybody who wants to be forwardly placed.
Well, and I think we put all those cards together, and it makes Sierra Leone very, very tough. I don't know if people watched, if you were watching yesterday, and was it Acacia? Had Acacia or Maggie had Chad on after, which win was it?
Dolomite probably.
Yeah, Dolomite. And he talked about what he wants to do with him going forward. He said he has further tinkered with the bit and with you know the things that he's trying to adjust with Sierra Leone, and you know feels like. You know, the fine tuning, we might get, what everybody's kind of been waiting for as soon as tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope so. It's interesting. This is the first time he's going to be in a race with less than 10 horses since his debut. So, you know, not that I think traffic has really dogged him at times, but look, it's undeniable that when you have his kind of running style, you're going to have to overcome some spots that you really won't have to. In a smaller type of field. So, you know, the best thing that could happen for this horse is that they settle in for the run down the backstretch, and he's about 5 lengths detached from that other group of 5 horses, and at least 2 or 3 of them are kind of ding-donging it on the front end. I would make him an extremely likely winner in that scenario. Hopefully Flavian doesn't have him drop too far out of it. You know, I think the concern with him, obviously the concerns abound because he's a horse who seems to be making his own trouble on occasion. You know, last time in the Belmont, he kind of lost his action on the far turn, and it looked like he was almost going to be pulled up, and then all of a sudden he started running again. He is just obviously a mountain of quirks and issues that Chad is trying to work out, and I'm sure Chad is working double time to figure out how to get things exactly right because there's undoubtedly talent there. The issue that you're always going to have with a horse like Sierra Leone is that he's never going to be particularly flashy. He's going to be eye-catching in the fact that he makes up a lot of ground, but it's going to be very hard for him to run a particularly fast race. What we're going to have to see from him is the ability to stay a little bit closer so that he's not so pace-dependent. But if he has a little bit more of a stalker type of feel to him than an all-out one-run closer, then, you know, in a race that has a somewhat moderate pace, he might be able to gather those horses in a little bit quicker. I also think that a lot of his situation will be helped by a type of race flow where he could just sort of run by everybody. He needs to not be in a position where he really has to start grinding you down, because it seems like that's when he gets a little foolish and doesn't quite stick to his business. So it's a lot that has to go on to make him win. But it seems like it's a lot less than some of the other horses in here. So he's a deserving, you know, relatively heavy favorite. The public seems to really like him. So I would imagine he'll go off a pretty solid favorite, but I'm intrigued by this. I will admit, I really didn't, after the Belmont, after they opted to not run Fierceness in the Belmont, I had a lot of doubts about whether we'd see Fierceness again, or maybe it would take a bit if something, you know, wasn't right. But they've got him here in what is clearly a prep, but he's a horse with a tremendous amount of talent. And, you know, I want the real Fierceness to show up as much as possible, because what we know at this point is he's the fastest three-year-old around when he's on his game. It just seems like that seems like it doesn't happen too often.
Well, given some of the depth, certainly of that ninth, the allowance and the maiden turf sprint, I'm sure some people will be singling. And I thought the Monmouth races, I thought there was a case to be made to spread a little bit more. I'm not as confident in Gunsong in that spot. I may use at least two more. So, little Jamie and you mentioned Chilled. And I'll tell you who stretching out. Greg Sacco. Sacco came up here, right, and won. Was that yesterday or Wednesday?
He came up. When did he come up?
Wednesday.
Recently.
I think on Wednesday and won. And the allowance race. I think we got Happy and Smiling. We got Aradazzi. We got Hopes and Dreams. At least three in there. I think the Sierra Leone, the time to lean on Sierra Leone for a big multi is in this cross country.
I agree. Fun sequence, undoubtedly. Should be a great day of racing. And, you know, obviously we want to enjoy all these Saratoga Saturdays.
Big time. And the weather, I mean, exquisite, that part. Anything else on that card tomorrow?
No, I think those are the main highlights, but I'll certainly have my thoughts up and try and get them up nice and early so everybody can digest and get tied on.
Well, as always, Nick, I appreciate it. NTAM 1215, Nick Tamaro, everybody, and I'm the jury at Twin Spires, and this is Twin Spires Weekend Preview, and we'll talk to Scully in a little bit, in about 45 minutes or so. Nick, good luck today, tomorrow, Sunday, and talk next week.
Sounds great, my friend. Good luck. Thanks, everybody.
Nick Tamaro, folks. Going to go out to Anne Arundel County. I had to think for a second. Going to check in with Callie, and they got a very nice card Sunday at Laurel. Not just the stakes sequence, and the stakes include the Big Dreyfus and the Miss Disco, and most notably, certainly the DeFrancis Dash, there we go. There's Callie.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
There's a lot to like.
The stake races on Sunday.
Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
And not just,
I think that's why you were calling, right?
It is, but I am going to mention in between, starting in really the sixth, the start of the pick five, there's a very good turf allowance, the sixth,
Before
the Alma North and before we get to the DeFrancis and to the Deputed Testimony. And, of course, we did have McPeak the other day, Frosted Departure, he's not sending. But anyway, it's good to catch up again. The Sunday state cards, nice.
We're having fun with it. We really are. I'm enjoying the fact that we're changing things up and that, you know, it's mostly due to Colonial not running on Sunday. And so I just love a change up, Steve. So this is, it's, it makes it for a long Sunday, but again, it doesn't, it makes the weekend a little bit more dynamic here in Maryland.
Yeah,
so we do start in race four with a concern. Did you want to talk about that at all?
Start there.
Okay. All right. So very interesting race after what happened between Celtic Contender and Play Harder last time out in the Star Jordan NASCAR. So it was very dramatic. So I'm going to go ahead and go with Celtic Contender on top. She physically won the race last out and just is obviously looking for, you know, retribution after that. I like the gallop out in that effort last time out. And we have a near bull at work. So Hammy Smith is coming back with a flash. He doesn't ride riders like Georgie. So for him to kind of, I think this is going to be a fun little matchup. So it's in between that one and, of course, Play Harder, who did, you know, by default, DQ ended up winning. So she is the horse to beat on paper. And she's had what? Yeah, so she's had how many wins? 5 wins and 6 starts. I mean, what's not to like? And then underneath, Sunny Breeze, Ned Allard, Jamie Rodriguez on the overnight so far. This is a half to Always Sunshine, who's a multiple listed stakes winner and a grade 3 winning sprinter. So it's all just very promising in those efforts. And Ned Allard having a fantastic summer thus far. I included the Ricky Dutcher horse underneath just because you have to respect this horse. Coming from New York, you have to respect this horse who's successful at this distance. Will be back in that inside trip. And we'll be trying to make that first trip that we saw back in that first start. But that was on the off going. So we'll see how that kind of... But Sanchez is a really good fit for this one. And then I don't know... Will Walden, I just don't know if he's kind of like McPeak. He'll enter, but probably half the time he doesn't ship up. So I do have him underneath because I've got to include him. Spicy Gate Speed on that one. This Will Walden horse will have something to say about the Ricky Dutcher horse if Ricky Dutcher wants to send.
Well, the horse that comes into this 2-for-2 and under the radar, I think, to the public, is Ned Allard's Sunny Breeze. Broke the maiden at Delaware early in the meet in May. Came back and blew away an allowance wire-to-wire, you know, in hand. Sunny Breeze. We'll keep an eye on this Cajun Breeze. I like that. We'll go to the 7th, the Alma North. This is the fillies and mares going 6.5, and big full field and some hard hitters.
Oh, definitely. You can't ignore Miss Puchero, who's just going to be she's going to be... Again, Spicy Speed is what I like to label it, and that's certainly what we get with this one. I have Michael Matz underneath. Oh, where did all of my notes go? Okay, that's a later Cali problem. But with Miss Puchero, obviously she was in the barn. She's been going very well. She's been very tough. I go big off of momentums, and for a price that she's probably going to be getting at. Again, I'm on the overnights. I don't see the morning lines in front of me, but I go just to her outside as well. So I go 7-8 with Apple Picker for Brittany Russell coming off of that Better Roses effort. Just not the best of goes. She gets back to her home track. She gets back to Maryland. She gets back at a distance that I do like for this filly. Then I go underneath with Late Frost, Michael Matz, Jamie Rodriguez. Again, what's not to like? This one has just kind of been hard knocking at the door. I like the spacing in between. I like that we haven't seen this one since early July. Michael Matz, 23% second off of the layoff as of lately. And then just underneath, just depending on some of these scratches, I go with Happy Clouds and then Bella Bettina for some local ones underneath.
Well, and interesting that Nacho Correas has been kind of taking his time with Joke CC. And we've talked to him about this Practical Joke mare that started her career in Chile. And feels like that was a major step forward in that Churchill win.
Now, it was. Why don't I have this filly on top?
Yeah, but it's a good group. You got Sweet Alyssa that is coming off the Opelousas win at Evangeline. It's interesting. This is just a $100,000 stake, and yet it drew horses from Kentucky and from Philly and virtually and from Louisiana. This is, Usyk is at Delaware now, but this is a horse that campaigned down. Evangeline. So I thought this was you got to be very happy with the racing office. Nice job.
For sure. This is probably one of the trickiest races on the card, to be honest, because there's so many of these fillies, as you mentioned, coming from different areas, and some of them, comparing the ship-ins with the top-end horses in Maryland, mm-hmm. just very, very hard to separate here.
The deputed testimony, as we mentioned, McPeak said he was going to, he said he got hustled with Frosted Departure. So right now we got a field of five. Gary Capuano with a nice Shafts Bullet and Ain't the Beer Cold, the veteran gelding. Be Better shows up here for Brittany Russell and Rapoli. Time for Trouble. Jeff Hiles comes in from High Point and Auto Glide, who nipped Shafts Bullet in the Battery Park at Delaware most recently for Greg Compton, who's having a terrific year, Greg.
It was so funny because I was watching Shafts Bullet replays first, and sometimes when I'm watching replays, I'm paying attention more to the horse. I'm not really totally paying attention to who the horse is. So I was like, man, that horse that beat Shafts Bullet must be a really nice horse. Who's that? I'm like, oh, Auto Glide. And then so I look up Auto Glide on my thorough manager program. I'm like, oh, entered for Sunday race 8. And me not, remembering that we have just, I'm so used to not having stakes on Sunday. So I'm like, oh, okay. So like Sunday feature race on Sunday. I'm like, oh no, it's this race. It's this. So they team up again here today, that Battery Pack, very, very telling on a couple of things. And I'm going to try and give Shafts Bullet one more chance here today because in that effort, he got more competitive when Auto Glide was making his move behind and kind of pushing Shafts Bullet along. So it was, to me, it was just a nose bob. And we get the same setup here again today. Shafts Bullet on the inside, Auto Glide on the outside. So, I mean, it sets up for both of them so well. And I won't be surprised if it's another head bob situation. But you do have Auto Glide, who's going for win number 5 in a row. So he's going to be hard to deny. I think he's going to be getting most of the money there that day, which makes me just say, hey, let's see if we can, get something for Shafts Bullet here today, especially at the, mile and an eighth distance. He's tried it before and he's been it's been a little elusive for him, while Auto Glide has never tried for the mile and an eighth distance. So based on the gallops out as well, that's kind of, I'm just leaning a little bit more towards Shafts Bullet, just on the sole fact that I might get a little bit more play with him. And then underneath those two, Time for Trouble is actually who kind of attracted me a little bit here today, here for Sunday. I think obviously just going to appreciate the cutback in distance. I think it's just a little bit of help here in a couple of different ways. So just kind of a little bit of an easy grab.
The DeFrancis Dash trying to work its way back to graded status. And it's been up and down the scale. Drew a nice group here. Nothing wrong with this bunch.
No. So we get ship-ins like Sibelius, Dean Delivers, Twisted Ride. I mean, and on top of that, we have, some nice Maryland horses as well. But I do end up going for a lot of the ship-ins that come in. I'm a huge fan of Sibelius, but I go with Twisted Ride on top. It's going to be extremely hard to ignore what cutting back in distance on this one. I always like it when Hernandez and Moore team up together. From that effort last time out, this is a cruiser. This is a very on top, one speed kind of guy. He gets the outside. The race just sets up very, very well for him. You can't ignore the Ned Allard horse, and Dean Delivers, another outside speed contender, but came off of that wonderful effort over at Delaware last time out, just completely dominated, teaming up again. And then Sibelius, Jerry O'Dwyer, ran behind two horses last time out that are in training with the two leading trainers of the Gulfstream Park meet. In addition to the back class that he has, he returned back to Maryland he hasn't been running. He hasn't ran at Laurel Park since his first start ever, where after that, he went on to win at Keeneland after that, and away he goes with the rest of his story. But I do think it's with that outside speed, with the way this race is going to play out, it's going to be tough. Under horses that I have underneath, I'm in between Prince of Jericho, Always in a Hurry, just two, you know, on it, you know, very trending horses right now that are in top form.
Well, I'm just reaching out to Michael Moore to see what he's doing with Twisted Ride.
Perfect.
He's cross-entered, of course, in the Vanderbilt, the nine-time winning Great Notion gelding. That he really has kept in nice form for an extended, you know, for an extended
period. I think Moore does an excellent job.
So do I.
Especially with his older horses.
Yeah, and I'm very curious what, because that Vanderbilt is tough. He's 20-1 there.
Yeah.
And here, what would he be here, actually, looking at this?
Let's see if I got an update.
No, there's no, I just looked at time form, and there's nothing up there.
Yeah, nothing up yet.
Prince of Jericho is going to be shorter. Obviously, Dean Deliver's shorter.
Yep.
Sebelius.
I think Always in a Hurry, if you can get that horse for a price, that's going to be, he might be fun to watch. Here's what's funny. In his last start, Karen's Notion, he got distracted because he broke behind Karen's Notion. And Karen's Notion, five jumps out of the gate, stopped and started bucking. It was the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. So he kind of got stuck behind all of that and was distracted by all of that and really came with a flourishing finish. So, you know, he was against a highly anticipated Point Doom in his last start. If you can get Always in a Hurry for a price for Phil Capilano, I like that horse a lot.
Well, third off the layoff and, a lot of his best efforts have come at Laurel in his career. And there's a lot to like here.
Gordian Knott, just to say by tactics-wise, it could be a blessing that he's kind of on the inside being pushed up further. 7-11 with the blinkers on. This horse is coming off of a big layoff but comes in with some nice works that make things attractive. Let's see, what do I have here for other horses? Awesome Aaron. The winner bounced hard next out at Del Mar, so maybe not grab that one amongst this field. See what else I've got. So Little Vic ended up, you know, was against, you know, the horse who ended up the Ned Allard horse who's in this field, but beat out also Prince of Jericho. But the reluctant loading in the Mr. Prospector, it could be, you know, he runs his horse in all kinds of different spots. So the only thing is that, you know, I hate to see a reluctant loading horse.
Yep.
That gives me a little bit of a radar. But if you want to throw some risky money there, only just due to the fact that this horse has beaten Prince Jericho and wasn't too far behind off of Dean Delivers, that's a horse worth, you know, maybe just throwing a couple of extra bucks at for fun.
I just heard back from Michael Moore. Twisted Ride will run in New York tomorrow.
Okay, there we go. So then Dean Delivers will be my top selection.
All right. The DeFrancis Dash, part of a really nice card Sunday at Laurel. These Sunday stakes and cooperation between the Mid-Atlantic Circuit Tracks, Colonial, and Laurel working nicely. And Callie, I appreciate it. We'll be watching.
Absolutely. Be sure to tune in on Sunday. It's going to be a fun day of racing. Thank you so much, Steve.
Talk to you soon. When's the next when's the next
event in my life?
Well, yeah, that too, right?
Yeah. No. What were you going to ask?
Well,
when's the next
one of these weekends, because they're coming about every 3 weeks, right? These Sunday stay cards?
Yes. So let me just, in fact, if you could hold on for 30 seconds, I can give you the August. So there will be stakes. We've been having stakes every Sunday stakes every weekend so far. So racing calendar, August.
You got the Caesar's Wish next week,
yes.
The Searching Stakes, and the Bald Eagle Derby.
Bald Eagle. So Bald Eagle Derby is always so fun for me to watch.
And then and then 2 weeks later, on the 18th, you got the Maryland bread, a pair of Maryland breads. All brandy and fine.
I'll still look at those I'll be out of town, but I'll still look at those races for you for the 4th.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
And then the fall calendar gets going in earnest in September, second week after Timonium.
Oh,
you're bypassing. You're not going to be at Timonium. You're going to disappoint everybody at the fair.
Yes, I am. And I don't feel guilty about it. Steve, I need a break. I'm going home. I need a break.
You're going. Things. That's because you want to go to the Wisconsin State Fair. Be honest.
1,000%. Wasaki, are you kidding me? Have I ever told you about the beer battered cheese curds at the Wasaki County Fair? It's like the Krispy Kreme of cheese curds, Steve.
No doubt. I've been to the Wisconsin State Fair and.
Not Wisconsin, Wasaki.
Your fair?
County fair.
All right.
My specific county fair, my old stopping grounds.
I've been to the big fair and there's the pork, there's that pork dinner place and the cheese curds are everywhere and.
Yes.
The corn with the silks as a handle, dipped in a vat of butter, and the butter carving contest. That's my favorite. The butter carving contest. I love that. There's the movie. There's a movie
there's
about
nothing,
it.
There's nothing as Wisconsin.
Yes.
As a butter carving contest.
Well, they're gonna miss you at Timonium. You won't be. That means you're not eligible to be Miss Prince George's County or whatever county it is.
Oh, I'm so honored that you even thought of me for that.
Callie Francois, everybody. Miss Francois to you. The best.
Have fun this weekend, guys.
Thanks, Callie.
Bye.
So much fun. She's such a good sport for my stupidity. The this is great. I Michael Moore answered me, and he must have a new phone. Because then he came back with, who is this? That's great. Yeah. Twisted Ride in the Vanderbilt tomorrow. Going for the Grade 1 glory. Let's head for David Aragona and bring David aboard and get his weekend analysis. I haven't mentioned the Bowling Green. Bowling Green is the Sunday feature. I've only glanced at the Sunday card. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Just talking about Twisted Ride, who is running in Saratoga tomorrow, not in Laurel on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a tough spot, but nice to see somebody taking a shot in a Grade 1 race, because it feels like there's a real dearth of sprinters who want to do that these days.
I know. It's a little odd. And, of course, we got the Bing. We talked yesterday about the Bing Crosby, which is fun, out at Del Mar. Before we dive into some spots, let's catch up a little bit from last week and maybe a little three-year-old review. We can use that as a backdrop for the Jim Dandy discussion, the Curlin and Haskell thoughts.
I mean, I think at this point it's hard not to be a fan of a horse like Dornock, who just has so much grit and heart. I mean, he comes under a ride around the far turn, and most horses you would think that they're done at that point, but he just keeps finding more. And I mean, rarely do you see horses come to the quarter pole with one traveling the way Mind Frame is and the other traveling the way Dornock is and not see Mind Frame win the race. But Dornock just doesn't let horses get past when he makes the front end. And, you know, in retrospect, those experiments to try to rate him and what happened in the Kentucky Derby probably were pretty consequential in the outcome, because he's the kind of horse that really needs to be in the mix every step of the way to run his best race. And feels like they know that now. And boy, when he gets to the front end, he is tough. He's a really cool horse, and I think he has to be considered the leader of the division at this point. And it sets up a really fun Travers. I mean, you mentioned the Curlin as well. I think we still have to learn how strong some of those horses are. Obviously, Unmatched Wisdom got, I think it was a 99 buyer for that race. So that compares pretty favorably to some of the other horses that won the more prestigious prep races. But he's obviously a promising sort, and he's another horse that has some early speed. So I think that's going to set up a pretty interesting pace scenario in the Traverse, especially, waiting to see what happens in the Jim Dandy, but there are plenty of speed horses in there that could potentially qualify. So it's just got me pretty excited for how this Traverse could shape up.
Yeah, exactly. And the next part of that equation comes tomorrow, 5:43 post, the Grade 2 Jim Dandy. And plenty of familiar faces, including the Preakness winner, the Florida Derby winner, the Bluegrass winner, and the Ohio Derby exacta. And then an invader from the West Coast, David, that is going to be a price and is going to be shrugged off on figs. He needs to step forward more. But I had a fairly accomplished observer of horse flesh on Monday visit the show, and Bob Baffert, I mean, gushed about this Pony Express.
He was real impressive last time, and that's a race that I think, when you look back, a little tough for speed figure makers to figure out. They typically don't run that many dirt races in Southern California these days, so tough to make some comparisons. I know Craig Bilkowski, who makes the Timeform US speed figures, had a much faster race than Beyer did. So I'll be interested to see how he stacks up against a group like this. I think it's going to be a really tough race for him to win, just given the way that his running style is going to play out against this field with others who also want to go forward, drawn inside of him. So that's a bit of a, he's a bit of a wild card in the race. I think they're going to try to go forward, and we'll see how that messes up the plans of some other horses. But, he's an exciting horse. It's just a really tough spot.
Well, how do you foresee this? I mean, are we all collectively acquiescing to Sierra Leone?
I mean, it just feels like it's a race he's supposed to win, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it does.
There's speed in here. I mean, Seize the Gray, Batten Down, Pony Express, who you mentioned. And, I mean, Fierceness, I mean, I guess drawing the outside post is going to help it, because in theory, it would give a horse like that some options because he's got tactical speed. But can Fierce just run that sort of race where he's perched out 3 to 4 wide, stalking horse in the clear? Or is that too much adversity for him to overcome? I mean, we don't really know. I mean, Fierceness, it's a pivotal race for him. But regardless, even if he shows up, it just feels like the pace could work against him. And Sierra Leone is just supposed to work out the right kind of trip. It was kind of interesting looking back through the races that Sierra Leone's participated in. He really hasn't faced a small field like this before, going all the way back to his debut race. And he's had traffic to navigate, and he's done it pretty well. But in this 6-horse field, where it feels like he's just going to set up shop in last, tracking the horses in front of him, he's not supposed to have any issues slicing through the pack. And it just feels like he's supposed to win this race. Now, whether or not that makes him the horse to beat in the Travers remains to be seen. I think it depends on what he does and how he accomplishes it on Saturday. But when I handicapped this race, I found him pretty tough to go against.
I agree. And Chad, as mentioned yesterday, trying to fine-tune whatever equipment is necessary and morning preparations. There's big assignments ahead yet, obviously, for Sierra Leone. And while Dornick may have taken, the clubhouse lead in the division last week, there's still plenty of mileposts to come, including Travers, including Pennsylvania Derby and Breeders' Cup. So a ways to go before those kinds of things are decided. Before we talk about any other spots on the Saturday card, David, a couple of overall impressions. We're 25% through the meet, and we're getting certain things that are always notable. Rails come down on the turf, and that can change up a little bit. Any trends, anything that has caught your eye? And I should also probably ask you, because I brought it up with Nick Tamaro last hour. Yesterday was a crazy betting day, in terms of some horses getting away at nutty prices, and then others kind of getting bet off the board for modest apparent reasons.
Yeah, I was going to say, overall impression so far is that the racing's been pretty good, and I know we're happy that the weather has cooperated for the most part so far. There have been a few days of this meet where it looked on the forecast the night before like rain was going to really mess with the card, and it's held off, so fingers crossed that we continue to get lucky in that sense, because last year I know that wasn't the case. But yeah, especially yesterday and some of the turf racing, really the past couple of days, I found that some of the results were tough for me to come up with. And anytime you're wrong about a race, I like to go back and sort of do a quick re-handicap to try to say, like, what did I miss? I think that's always a good exercise to do as a handicapper. And you know, there are some horses that won the past couple of days that, I look back and I just couldn't come up with, like that filly that won the mile 3/8 race allowance race yesterday. I mean, maybe you say 23-1 was a big price on her, but I found it tough to identify the races in her past that, you know, made her particularly appealing in that race. But I mean, that's the great thing about Saratoga. You've got connections coming in from all different directions, horses trying new things for the first time, facing off against company they haven't met before. And if you get horses like that that go off at big prices, I was really scratching my head at the winner of, I think it was the second race, that Greg Sacco horse that,
yep.
I think I pegged him at 3-1 in the morning line. I thought he'd be one of the favorites in the race, and drifted all the way up to 6-1. I mean, sometimes you worry that a horse like that is dead on the board, but then it wins for fun. So, especially making the lines for some of these races, I feel like I'm usually pretty dialed into the way they bet Saratoga, but there have been a few races that have really surprised me in that sense.
Well, and that was the one yesterday. In fact, Nick and I, and actually Andy too, we both were, all three of us, were not just surprised that another day gone by went off at that price and won the way that she did, but that was the Greg Sacco horse. Sacco came up because of the horse that he's got in the Monmouth Oaks tomorrow. That was the Greg Sacco reference. I also thought that Reddington was a fabulous number. Yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you watch races and watch trips, and you took in Reddington's last race, he made a lot of sense. I mean, he was a horse that had been a little bit of a disappointment since they purchased him at auction. But, I mean, he was in a tough field last time, and that was just the kind of trip that gave a horse like that no chance. He was really rank early, and then was very wide on the turn on a day when it felt like the rail was the place to be at Aqueduct. So if you kind of assessed his trip and, you know, thought about what he could have done last time with a better journey, the trip worked out for him yesterday and was able to deliver it. Yeah, I was surprised at the price, especially after some of the scratches in that race, but not complaining about it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's turn to the rest of the Saturday card and let's shop for some attractive opportunities, David. Go wherever you want.
I mean, I'm excited for some of the two-year-old racing this weekend. I don't know if they're great betting affairs. I mean, it depends on how much you like to bet those races. I know some people just like to appreciate them as a fan and not really get too heavily involved. But doing some of the work on these cars and watching the workouts, I think we're going to see some good two-year-olds this weekend, especially in that seventh race on Saturday. Just feels like there's real potential in there. I mean, obviously, you've got the $1.2 million son of Serengeti Empress going out for Brad Cox, but it seems like the Chad Brown horse in there, Chancer McPatrick, is one that they like. I've been impressed with the glimpses I've gotten of Tharholm, who is the Bill Mott horse drawn outside. Tiztastic for Steve Aspison. That's a horse that, if you've seen any of his workouts, he is a big son of Tis the Law, who looks like one that might ultimately want to go further than this. But we've seen Steve Aspison have a lot of success with these two-year-olds, especially going some of these longer distances. This one is 6.5 furlongs, which I think is the longest two-year-old maiden they've run so far on the dirt at the meet. And I'm just excited to see how some of these races play out, because I think we've gotten off to somewhat of a slow start with seeing really impressive two-year-old performances at this meet. But, I mean, that's pretty typical. You see some of the better two-year-olds start to get unveiled once we get into August, and I think we're going to start to see some glimpses of that this weekend. So I'm looking forward to that. But, I mean, even moving on to some of the late pick five races, I think you've got some interesting betting opportunities. The eighth race is a 5.5 furlong turf sprint for the maidens. Kind of interested in the number 7, Laborna, who I just thought got a no-chance trip last time at Aqueduct. She was held up in traffic at the back of the pack in a race where the pace really held together. Just felt like that was sort of a prep off the layoff, and once she was really not in good position, Junior Alvarado just sort of let her coast home that day. I think she's going to run a lot better here. She obviously showed some potential at Saratoga last summer. In the ninth race, optional claimer, first level allowance for the three-year-olds on the turf. I'm hoping that the number 11, Tifere, can finally get a better trip. He's kind of been in the wrong spot in a couple of recent races. I mean, I never want to be too hard on horses for not running well over that Churchill turf course, which was the case two back, but he kind of got in some traffic in upper stretch that day. And then last time he drew another wide post, and Tyler actually did a pretty good job saving some ground in the two path, but again, at the top of the stretch, just got totally blocked in traffic in a race that had gotten away from it at that point. It was still finishing at the end. I don't like that he's drawn wide again in this race, but I think he's going to finally run better. And I'm not thrilled with some of the horses that are going to be short prices in here, so I think it's a pretty wide open race where you can get a decent price on a horse like that. We already covered the Jim Dandy in the 11th race. It's a first level allowance New York bred on the turf, and I've got kind of a totally wacky, crazy idea on this race, because I mean, the favorites like Rabaha, who ran well last time and clear conscience towards the inside. I mean, he probably ran one of the better races in that June 30th allowance race. They're okay, and there are some horses drawn towards the outside who can take money. I think Easy Roll makes a lot of sense, but none of them necessarily knock your socks off. I think it's a pretty wide open race, and I just got an idea with the number 5, American Grant, who sort of has to be a gigantic price in this race just due to connections and his recent results. When you go back and watch the last 3 trips that this horse has gotten on the turf, I mean, he's better than that. You can't go 3 to 4 wide around both turns of a turf route and have success, and that was the case. 3 back, 2 back, he was legitimately 4 wide around both turns. And it's not like he was beaten by 15, 20 lengths in these races. He was, you know, within striking distance at the top of the stretch, and you just can't make up the ground when you lose all of that position on the turns. And then last time out, his jockey tried to save a little more ground, but ended up behind a couple of long shots and just got totally taken out of the race. And he actually made this deceptively strong backstretch move to get back into the race, and then couldn't really finish it off after that. I like the rider upgrade to Ricardo Santana Jr. I just think this horse is going to be a huge price. It could outrun his odds. Not a likely winner, but one that I think is probably more like a 10 to 12 to 1 shot that's going to be upwards of 20 to 1. So he's one that I'm pretty interested in. And then the last race of the day, you know, there's another big price in here that I don't know how clever this one is going to be, because it has a little bit of a look to it. But the number 8, Princess Summer, if you go back and watch the replay of her debut, clearly just a prep race, very conservative ride from Joel Rosario that was really running out at the end. She's got a pedigree that says that she's supposed to go longer, especially on the dam side, the dam's produced turf route winners. And then, you know, I don't care about the dirt race last time, claimed by Sharp Connections, Michael Dubb and Mike Maker. So she's one that I feel like could outrun her odds in the finale.
Hey, go back, and these are both my favorite division. People are probably sick of hearing me talk about New York breds long on the turf. But David, it is the best wagering opportunity division. Literally, from favorite to the 8th or 9th choice, invariably are separated by a couple of lengths. And if you're using figs as a measurement tool, you know, Thorograph is my preferred performance figure. You look at this group, literally, one after the other is a win candidate, including your American guest, absolutely. Easy Roll and the horse on the outside of Easy Roll, the
Willing to Risk It All.
Willing to Risk It All.
Yeah. Jose D'Angelo. Yep.
And I'm not, you know, listen, I'm jockey changes. Everybody can see jockey changes for, you know, and interpret them as they want. You know, Pratt takes over on Willing to Risk It All for D'Angelo, and Dottori takes over on Easy Roll for Morley. They're 6 and 8 to 1. You bring up American Grant. It's the best wagering opportunity. You know, it's particularly in focus up here. But Downstate too. And I love these. These are my favorite bets.
Yeah, and also one of the things I love about Saratoga in these turf races is you get opportunities to find prices ridden by jockeys that typically wouldn't go off
yep.
the kind of prices that yep. they do in these races. And you know, when you handicap this same race at Aqueduct, you find the 50 and 20 to 1 shots ridden by jockeys that you don't really trust to work out the trip that you're hoping for on the turf. But you know, connections come to Saratoga, they get opportunities to book jockeys that they typically wouldn't have access to at other meets, and you find real wagering opportunities with horses that are bigger prices that might work out decent trips in these races. So you know, the races are so competitive, as you said, and trips are of the utmost importance, especially in these two-turn turf routes. So I think they're great wagering opportunities.
David Aragona, horse to watch, of course, and the various outlets that you can enjoy David's work. David, I appreciate it. Best of luck this weekend and Whitney weekend. Really, the real Saratoga for a lot of people coming up in the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. The racing's only going to continue to get stronger, we hope. Hopefully the weather cooperates. But yeah, definitely a nice start to the meet. Looking forward to the rest.
There it is. David Aragona, folks, does just a tremendous job, the morning line maker, and the work he does for Timeform, and always insightful. We're going to take the break. I've made up some ground. I've made up about 4 minutes. See if we – there we go. Good job, Brian. That's it. When we come back, Scully's going to join us. We'll get Scully's plays. Really should slip in a little Ellis as well. And Marcus couldn't join us this week. He said he was booked solid. I mean, come on. Isn't he only booked solid if he's on with us at 10 o'clock? That's part of his Friday bookings. I would like to think. I'm going to give you his game plans. And, of course, you can see it right on the pages of the form. But he did the Bing Crosby, the Ontario Colleen. I should slip in the Woodbine action as well tomorrow. And the Monmouth Oaks in the Bing Crosby. He's talking about, you know, the Chosen Bronze and the short prices. And he thinks that that this is a little deeper water for the Chosen Bronze. And it looks like... I'm looking at this for the first time, so I'm trying to figure out what he he considered Straight No Chaser. He doesn't think Happy Jack repeats. I thought Happy Jack was live. Close the Game Sugar and Anarchist he talks about. And he's sort of acquiescing. He actually acquiesces to in the final analysis. He acquiesces to the Chosen Bronze. And he likes Ready for Sherl in the Ontario Colleen. And he sided with Chilled in the Monmouth Oaks. 9-2 on Chilled. So there's game plan in a nutshell. What am I missing here? We did Laurel. We could put that to bed. I'm hoping James slipped in a little, maybe a little Del Mar. We'll do some Del Mar with Hammer as well. About 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Gary Pomisano Jr. as mentioned to address the turf situation at Churchill. He'll join us. And Dave Grenning before we send you into the weekend. I just put the scratches up. They actually were on Naira Betts right away. That's where I got them today. Andy was slow getting to him. Back after this, we'll talk to Scully. Twin Spires weekend preview continues. Sirius XM.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
An app created specifically for horse racing. Naira Betts. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Betts. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Freezing Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association presents the new and improved Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Six $100,000 stakes for PA sired, PA bred Zoot Parks. Two 6-furlong contests on PA Derby Day. The 2-year-olds then go 7 furlongs on December 30th. Here's the big change. The last two races are in August 2025 for 3-year-olds. Then 50,000 in breeder bonuses go to the top 3 horses in the series. For more, go to PABred.com.